Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, J. Michael Michael here for 2019. If you're like me and you love talk radio, but you can't find anything worth listening on the AM dial, then how about this? Tune in to LA Talk Radio. You see, LA Talk Radio is a .com and has it all from sports to music to self-help to just about anything, including talk. And right now, we have the new writer's favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, pour some more wine, open some more chocolates, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, anybody want to take a gander as to what that music was to?
Is that the X-Files?
No.
Oh, it's not the
no.
X-Files?
No.
I know what it is.
What is it?
Stranger Things.
Good girl. See?
Oh, my God. We didn't get it?
We have a Texas girl, and she knows Stranger Things. And I'll tell you, JT, to be honest with you, I couldn't have found better music for this show.
No, it's perfect.
I love that show. It's a great show. It's right up my element.
Oh, us too. We just absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. Well, okay. Well, you know, hi, guys. This is Jim Christina. Of course, this is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. I have no one in studio with me tonight because Bob's night off, but I do have our wonderful, charming, delicious, deluxe, wonderful radioific co-host on the line, Bobby Jean Bell. How about everybody welcome Bobby Jean to the Writer's Block?
Hey, Jim. Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, you're probably happy to be anywhere.
Yeah,
yep.
True. I don't know about being on Eudora, though, but we'll talk about that later.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Well, let's get into this, because this book is so good. So good. Our guest tonight is J.T. Bishop, and she was born and raised in Dallas, Texas, began writing in 2012, which is amazing because this story is like somebody who's been writing a lot longer than 6 or 7 years. She is inspired by a video that theorized the meaning of the end of the Mayan calendar. J.T. began the Red Line trilogy. The video surmised that the Earth was the central hub of activity for extraterrestrials thousands of years ago. JT didn't know whether that was true or not, but it did spawn an idea. And what if those extraterrestrials were still here? 2 years and a lot of work later, the first 3 Red Line books were complete. She's not done. The Red Line saga develops, and as she continues to write new books, she loves stories that explore characters' unique abilities and origins, and it's the thrill of the unknown that continues to inspire her stories. Welcome to the Writer's Block, if you would please, Miss JT Bishop.
Oh, I love that applause. That's so nice.
Well, you know what? You know, it's really hard to contain them when they're in the studio.
Right.
Well, JT, it's so nice to have you with us tonight.
Oh, it's exciting to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, it's been a while. You know, it's been a long trail. You're trying to get on the show, but you finally made it.
I finally made it. Eventually it was going to happen, and I'm here.
Yes, you are, and we're very, very thrilled because Bobby and I both read this book, uh-huh. The Shift, which uh-huh. is the first of the Red Line series.
Yes.
Introduces some wonderful characters.
Yeah.
One of my favorites is Declan.
Uh-huh. He's a great character.
He is a good character. You know, it's kind of funny with him because he's supposed to be this big-time security guy, but he's got a lot of vulnerability to him. So,
yeah.
So and of course, we have Morgana, uh-huh. whom I think you stole the name from, like, the Arthur legend.
oh, I don't, it wasn't my plan to do that, but you never know, these things sneak in.
Now, I have to just jump in and say, I did not read that one. I read High Child.
Well, you did.
Read High Child.
I read High Child. Yeah, I was gifted with the PDF of High Child.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I'm excited to hear about The Shift.
Yeah, The Shift was the first one. It's really a great story.
Perspective. Very good.
Well, so we've almost got them all covered then, huh?
Well, both books have merit. So
they do. They do. They do. And you know, I once I got into it, and I'm just, I mean, I started to read it, and just the words flowed so evenly, and I was amazed. And then I read your bio again. I said, wait a minute, she just started writing in 2012? This is like written by somebody who's got a lot more experience than that.
I thought totally the same thing with the one I read.
Yeah. Now, what's your day job, if you have one still?
Actually, yes, I do have a day job. I'm a manager at a swim school.
At a swim school?
At a swim school, yes.
Wow. I didn't think they had managers, but I guess they do.
Kids learn how to swim, and they're safe in the water.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you get to spend your day in a bathing suit.
Everybody has a pool. Everybody needs to learn how to swim.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, big thing here. Mm-hmm.
Well, especially where you live out in Texas. I mean, God, you need a pool out there.
Yeah, you know, you got to have a pool. It's hot.
Yeah,
it's hot.
It does get hot and sticky and icky. Icky. Yeah. Icky. So you started writing in 2012, and as your bio says, you got the idea off the Mayan calendar that it was supposed to end in December, what was it, 22nd, 2012?
Yeah, it was like December 21st, 2012. Oh, yeah. That was supposed to be the end of the world.
Right. Well, it shows you how smart the Mayans are.
The Mayans,
are.
I guess.
They're not around. And when was the last time anybody saw a Mayan? Worked for them.
It's been a while.
That's like Y2K. We all thought it was all going to end on New Year's Eve 2000, right?
I know, Y2K. And everybody's scrambling around trying to get their computers fixed so they wouldn't crash and burn, and
exactly.
Nothing happened.
Yes, I recall that.
It just rolled over to 00.
So interesting, though, that you got that idea from, Now, so do you read?
Yeah, I thought it was.
Do you like to read the genre that you write in? Like, or was it just this particular Mayan, you know, that particular video that caught your attention?
Well, both. It just sort of sparked the thought of, you know, what if extraterrestrials remained on Earth? What if they lived among us?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very curious topic for me. And that's the kind of genre I would like to read. You know, it's the unknown, it's the paranormal, it's the what if kind of stories, mm-hmm. like the Stranger Things, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
I find quite interesting and fascinating. And it just sparked that idea of what would happen if this community lived on Earth, and if there was a crisis, how would they handle it? They couldn't let anybody know who they were. And it just kind of took off running. And I'd sort of played with writing throughout the years and never really took too seriously. Would put things together, write a few pages, put it away. You know, it's like what everybody does. It's not that good, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know, whatever happened with this particular story, I couldn't put it down. And then I just kept writing, and one book became a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a sister series spinoff from that, which is what you read from, Bobby. The High Child is from the sister series. So it just spawned a whole slew of books because it's so fun to write. I just get such a kick out of it.
Well, I know that we know that good writing often comes from that simple question, what if?
Mm-hmm.
And I felt as I was reading High Child anyway, without reading anything about you beforehand, I like to just meet the book, you know, meet the author in the book. And I just kept feeling like, wow, here's another what if. You know, what if he's simple things, even like what if he's struck by a bear and then he's bitten by a snake, you know, like just not even the big plot things with the what ifs. But this book was just full of like, why did she decide he needed to be bitten by a snake too? You know, she's just filled it with what ifs. And I thought that was just really fun because you take us down little alleyways that are not probably that necessary to the plot and the character development, but makes it really rich in the experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I needed to, I like to add a little flair and put my characters through the ringer. And I thought, you know what? I know he's gone down with the bear, but you know, this is a big guy. He really needs to be knocked down a peg or two. And so I threw in the snake bite as well to really give him something to worry about.
Wow, yeah.
Yes. It makes it more entertaining. I like to entertain people.
Well, it's amazing.
You know, and in his case, we're just meeting this character, and then I'll be quiet. We're just meeting this character, and we realize that he does seem to have some extraordinary additional kind of gifted some skills. But you show us right away that this is not a superhero. He has vulnerability.
Definitely. I think all my characters
make that real clear.
I like all my characters have some vulnerability to them. I think that's what sort of connects you to them. I think we're all in that space. We're all vulnerable. And even if you have certain abilities that are maybe better than somebody else, there's other areas in your life that you struggle and you might need help. And I think that is what sort of helps me bring my characters to life. You know, they may have some extra abilities, but they're also weak in other areas. And so that's where they sort of kind of reach out for others for assistance, for help. And I think that's what helps us, or helps me at least connect to them, and makes me kind of fall in love with them. So they're fun to write.
Well, they're fun to read.
Some of the characters, Jim, in the book you read, were they like that too?
They're all vulnerable. Well, the premise of the book, The Shift, is, and I'm not going to give out any spoiler alerts, at least not many.
Okay.
The premise of the book, The Shift, is that the Eudorians, when they reach like puberty or adulthood, they have to shift. Okay. Their bodies shift into a different type. I really don't even know how to explain it. And amazingly enough, John couldn't explain it really well.
I mean, you try and explain it, but because of who they are and where they're from, they go through a period of transformation.
Right.
Much like adolescents do,
right?
As earthlings, we move into adulthood, we go through changes. Our bodies go through changes. We learn new things about ourselves. Well, Eudorans do the same thing at a much more accelerated pace.
Right. It only takes them a couple days and they're done.
Exactly. And if you're a red line, it can be rather intense and can be, in fact, even life-threatening, since they are, they're on Earth. They're not on their own planet.
Exactly.
So they don't have the resources that they would normally have. So this is the whole thing about book one, is about Sarah and her shift. She doesn't even know who she is and what she's about to go through, and they have to get her through it, and they got to keep her alive because she could be the key to their survival.
Right.
Which, goes through the rest of the next few books. But she doesn't even realize what's about to happen to her or who she is. And the other thing about the shift is it will bring out into the open what Theo's abilities are.
Right.
So she has to learn, who she's about to become and what she's capable of doing. So
right. And
that's what the whole shift is about.
I will add, Sarah is a badass.
Sarah's a badass.
She is.
Sarah learns to be a badass.
She is definitely. She's no one you want to stand in front of when she's got her grouch on. I'll tell you.
Yeah. You don't want to mess with her in the middle of her shift. She's going through a hard time right now.
But the premise of the story was so intriguing that it just keeps you glued to the page, and you just keep going, and you go, wow. It was just like, holy crap, this is really a good story. And it's just a page burner. Yeah. I mean, we'd mention that a lot. Just, page burner to us is when you just can't stop reading. And
Are there some steamy sexual scenes in that book, Jim?
Nope.
Oh,
nope.
There are a few in High Child.
Yeah, there are a few in High Child.
No.
There are a few in the others. But you got to keep going in the trilogy, and then you might have a few of those.
Yeah, no sexo in questo libro. No sex in this book.
They're just getting to know each other.
Yep, and I understand, though, that a couple books down the road that John and Sarah kind of hook up anyway.
I kind of
got that. Well, JT, I don't get much pleasure reading it anymore.
Yeah. Well, the whole premise of the book was initially just going to be one book.
Uh-huh.
I didn't see it as a trilogy. But once I got through writing her shift, I realized, good grief, I can't, if I keep going with what's going to happen next, this is going to be like an 800-page book. There's just no way.
Well, yeah.
It's like once I got her through the shift, I realized, okay, this is the end of book one. Now I have to start book two. And then I knew then it was going to be a trilogy.
Right, right. Well, you left so many loose ends in book one. There were so many questions left to be answered, and they weren't at the end of the book. So, I mean, you're kind of looking for more pages saying, come on. Who is this guy? Come on.
Yeah, now, what's next? What happens?
Wait a minute.
In a case like that, did you go back through the editing process and kind of add those unanswered questions once you knew you would be writing a trilogy? Or were they there as you were writing it?
They were there as I was writing it.
They were there as you were writing. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I thought I would be answering them, but I didn't realize how much long it was going to take me to get through the shift itself. And I thought, well, it's going to be much better if I break this into three different stories. Granted, not all things get answered in book one, which is why there's a book two, and not all things get answered in book two,
right,
which is why
right.
there's a book three.
Right.
But the good thing is they're all published, so you don't have to wait.
Right.
Just
right.
keep on reading. You can pick up one, and then two, and then three.
You know, there's something to be said for good selling. I mean, you kind of like the yellow pages. Never stop selling.
Yeah.
Never stop selling. It's called shameless self-promotion. You go for it, JT.
it was a fun book to write, you know, but I kind of shifted, you know, when I went into the sister series and started with the fourth book, I didn't really want to leave the characters behind in the trilogy. But yet I wanted to sort of try something a little different, like a murder mystery kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I got into Curse Breaker and High Child. And then the third one, Spark, and they sort of are more of a whodunit. Like High Child has a murder mystery in it, Cursebreaker does too. But yet there's a connection to the original three books. So, and those characters from those three books will show back up in the sister series as you move through that. But yet those books are more of a one story, you know, in a book. So there's no really
they're standalone stories.
It's like standalone
book.
Yeah, it stands alone.
Now, I had our engineer asked me when we were sitting in the office before we went on the air today. He said, when you guys are writing series of books, do you know where each book is going to go, or do you find that out as you're writing the previous book? So there's a question for you.
I knew from the first three that I knew where that was going.
Mm-hmm.
I knew where I was headed. When I got into the sister series, not so much, book four was a standalone. I knew that book. And then when I wrote book five, I had started to think about in terms of how do I relate it to book four? Where is this one going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to make this a standalone? And then how will I relate that to the next book? So that was a little bit more, book by book. The first three were all sort of together.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of split the story into three different parts.
Okay.
But the next books after that were sort of, I had to think in terms a little bit differently, but yet connect them. So, yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, I've written a couple series now, and I think by the time about three quarters of the way through a book, I know where the second one's going. And the same thing with the second one. I know where the third one is going to go. Because as I'm writing, I'm thinking, this is a great, good story. And then you mic the notes,
Yes, exactly. That happens a lot as you write.
Right.
It pops in as you're writing. And then you think, ooh, I like that.
Exactly.
I'm going to do that. And that's when you'll sort of, and it's just things like things show up when they need to show up.
Right. Right.
So I don't really push so much the story when I'm first getting started. I'll just have my outline and I'm ready to go and I'll sit. But I'm very open to things popping in as I write because those are often the very best things for your story.
Exactly.
Wait for them to show up.
Well, I just finished a standalone book, and a character popped up from two books ago. And the guy's name is Caleb Stringfelt. You know who he is, Bobby. You read the book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And he's a main character in this particular book that's a standalone, but it's not in a series. It's just a book.
Okay.
Okay. But I like to use my characters in other stories because that makes them real to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I love doing that.
So, and I'm glad you do, because that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's why I brought the characters in from the first three books into the next 4, 5, and 6. And then number 7, it's like there's a culmination of both series sort of come together and culminate in this sort of last sort of battle sort of thing. So it's a, you know, kind of will wrap up the whole thing in book 7.
Uh-huh. So how does a swimming manager wind up writing extremely good books?
Well, you know, I did a lot of dabbling. I think a lot of people do this. They sort of dabble and don't take it seriously. And I don't know why this particular one just hit me and I sat down and then didn't stop. But it did. It just kept going. And I just sat and wrote, and I wasn't really thinking I was going to be like, you know, published book kind of person. I was just going to write a book or write the story and see what happened. Mm-hmm. And then when I finished it, I realized, shoot, I actually have a book on my hands. Mm-hmm. And then, but you don't really know, is it really any good? And, you know, is it worth doing anything with it? So you just kind of have to take the risk and decide, are you going to tell people you wrote it? Or are you just going to stick it in a, you know, in a drawer and let it sit? So I actually told people and sort of, you know, took the risk and had some people read it. And they came back and they're like, you know what? It's really good. It's a really good story. And then I sort of felt like, okay, maybe I should run with this. And so, you know, I've just kept going since then. And obviously the more you write, the better you get. So
sure.
I don't know. It just seems to have worked out for me.
No, it seems to have worked out for the reader as well, because they've got some pretty good stories they get to read.
So, yes. And they're stories that I would read. So that way, and I know if I'm having fun writing it, I'm probably going to have people who enjoy reading it.
There you go. And that's, mm-hmm. I think if you get that, you're a successful writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know you got something if you're having a fun time writing it. So.
Exactly. And especially if your friends are having, your friends, and that's, you know, sometimes that's all you're going to get to read your books is your friends. But if they're enjoying it.
Sometimes.
Hey,
sometimes.
You know. Sometimes.
It has a lot of reviews on Amazon, so there's lots of people reading other than your friends.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have gotten some good reviews, so that makes me feel like, okay, it's not just my friends, other people.
No.
No, and actually, we love to talk about how an author responds reading reviews. Is it, mm-hmm. you know, do you like to read them? Do you kind of, you know, read them with one eye closed? Have they all been positive? How do you deal with a one that maybe isn't? Just kind of talked a little bit about what it's like to read reviews.
Yeah. It's interesting to read your reviews. I do read mine because I'm just curious to know what people think. I'm not so much stuck on, you know, you don't have, I mean, obviously everybody's subjective. Some people love it. Some people are okay with it. I'm pretty lucky in that most of my reviews are very positive. I mean, I've gotten the occasional, I think I've gotten a few 1-star reviews, and that's fine. I get it. You know, you have to expect that as a writer, not everybody's going to love your work. And I struggle with the genre to put it in. Some people mm-hmm. think science fiction. Some people think paranormal. And I'm afraid if I put it as science fiction and you read it and it's not like a Star Wars, Star Trek kind of thing. And it isn't. There's no space battles or mm-hmm. laser wars or anything like that. It's all based on Earth. Sometimes you get a reader who thinks it's supposed to be something else and it's not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I get that. That's normal. So, I appreciate people's opinions, because I think if they really have a, you know, something positive to offer me, I'm happy to hear it. But if they have something to say that they don't like, well, then who knows? Maybe you can make it better in some way. But, you know, I'm not really too upset. If I were getting lots of negative reviews, that would be, you know, obviously that would be a little upsetting. But for the most part, my reviews are good. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pretty pleased, and I don't really have a problem reading them.
I don't have a problem with reviews, especially if they're honest.
Yeah, as long as you're honest, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I can learn something off a review, boy, you just got bonus points. But if it's just a slam, you know,
you should think about that.
Especially when they didn't buy the book, somebody gave it to them, and then they send you a review that's really horrid, and you go,
yeah.
You know, God, what did this cost you? Nothing.
Yeah, nothing, yeah.
The Italians have a word for that.
Or you get the occasional, like, I got one 1-star review, and they made some sort of comment that made absolutely no sense. And I'm like, I don't even know. Did you read the book? I don't know what that means. It's like so confusing. Sometimes you get the strangest comments. It's like almost sort of amusing to read them. Like, yeah. I don't understand what you're talking about.
Well, we have writers.
You know, it's all part of the process.
Yep. We've had writers on the show that absolutely live for their reviews. And I mean, it's horrid. And it's there. I mean, they're. If they get one bad review out of 50, it's like they lament the bad review and don't even mention the 49 good ones.
No,
you know, that's,
that's, you can't do that. You just can't do that.
It's, well, it's beyond reason, I have to say.
Yeah, it'll make you miserable.
It will.
There's no point. You can't make everybody happy. It's not going to happen.
And I just look at it.
As long as most of the people are happy, I'm happy.
We tell writers all the time, look, not everyone is going to like your work. It's okay if somebody doesn't like what you've written. Someone else is going to, so don't worry about it.
It's perfectly fine. It's part of being an artist, just the way it is.
The proof is in the sales, and that is the truth. And as long as you're not afraid to shamelessly self-promote, JT, which you are very good at, you're going to make something. So it's just forget the bad ones, move them aside, and keep going.
Yeah. That's all you can do is just forget the bad ones and move on.
That's it. And right now, I'm gonna break right there. I'm gonna do some commercials, and we'll be back in just a minute. Bobby Jean, you got your commercial out?
Oh, you know I do. You know, we've had such a cold snap going on, haven't we?
Yep.
This is the time of year that we reach for a warm, cozy blanket, a blanket that gets better with time. And out west is your source for the Cadillac of blankets, the Denali Collection. Softer and warmer than fleece, these unique blankets are made from an innovative fabric called microplush. And Denali has patterns and designs for any home decor style. You provide the fire, the book, and your favorite hot beverage, and Out West provides the blanket. Come on over to outwestshop.com to find the perfect cozy throw for your long winter nap. Use coupon code BLANKET and save $10 off your order of $75 or more. Call toll-free 1-877-340-9378, and it's always a great day out west.
You're leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended, but what about the dog? Well, All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged buddy a place to run and play outside among orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming, and training, extra training. Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And when your pup returns home, that smile on his face will leave you wondering whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's. Well, we know whose vacation was better. It was always the dog's. So give All Dogs Rule a call, 805-524-1100. Give Russ and Karen a shout, and they'll love to have your dog, and your dog will love to be with them. And when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients and needs and goals, push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership that is modeled on how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet the client's goals. So Creative Edge, your brand and your future. Give Mickey Mickelson a holler or go to his website, creativeedgepublicity.com. And Mickey is a great publicist. He is my publicist and many others that have been on this show. And he would love to hear from you. And that is, we are back. It is now 7:28. We are on the phone with J.T. Bishop and, of course, our lovely, charming co-host, Bobby Jean Bell, whom I'm sure is still there. Bobby.
I'm here.
And, J.T., I know you're there because we can hear you breathing.
No. I'm here. You can hear me breathing. Yep, I'm here. Otherwise.
Okay. You're a fairly new writer yourself.
Yeah.
What what would you tell a new writer should they ask you a question about the process that they need to go through to be a writer?
Oh boy. I would tell them that it takes time to be patient.
Mm-hmm.
This whole writing business, as they say, is a marathon, not a sprint.
Right.
I think a lot of people write a book and they think that's it. It's a bestseller. I'm going to make a mint. and that's typically not what happens. There's a lot of work that goes into this whole process. It's not just writing the story. It's what happens after that.
Mm-hmm.
Promoting your book, building your audience, building your email list, getting the next book started and building up more books to sell. I mean, the first book is just the very, very beginning. There's a whole more to it after that. So it's just learning your craft, talking about yourself. That's one of the hardest things that was for me to learn. It's one thing to write a book. It's another thing to put yourself out there. Mm-hmm. And talk about your book and talk about yourself and talk about how you're a writer and talk to people about how what you do, because it's not something I do naturally.
Right.
Getting out on social media and blogging and posting and doing an interview like this. I mean, it's just the sort of thing that you really kind of have to put yourself out there.
Right.
It comes with the territory. So writing is just a very small piece of the puzzle. There's a whole lot more to it beyond that. So I've learned a lot about that over the last few years.
Well, and you're right. New writers need to learn that it is not a sprint. You know, the turtle wins the race when you're a writer.
Yes.
Yeah, and we actually had a writer on, Tosca Lee. And her comment was, when we asked her the same question, she said, the first thing I would tell a writer is, like I do, write drunk and edit sober.
Yeah.
You remember that? Remember that, Bobby?
I do.
It was a great comment.
Oh,
in fact,
yeah,
it cracked us all up.
You can do that too.
It cracked us all up, but she was not kidding.
No, I completely agree. That first edit needs to be your own. You know, write whatever the heck you want to write and make it, you know.
Exactly.
Whatever comes to mind and just throw it on the page, slap it on down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you got to clean it all up.
That's actually the key word right there is editing, because if you don't have a good editor or somebody who knows their way around a red pencil, man, it's just, you know, you're going to get your work done, but it's just not going to be probably to where it needs to be, where it could be. Because, you know, as a writer, you have the basic story and you put it down. It takes your editor to go back through it and say, you know what, you know, red pencil this out, write this in blue pencil and put this in here and little arrows and, you get a manuscript back and, you know, how do you read this thing? So
it amazes me no matter how many times I go through, you know, get the first draft and then the second draft and then I'm rereading and rewriting and you think, oh, this is perfect. This is it.
Nope.
And then you send it to the editor and it's like, oh, God.
Nope. And then
it comes back with all these comments and revisions. It's like, oh, man.
And then you get the galley proofs and you look at them and you've got where it says too many, it's 1-0. Or stupid mistakes.
Like it never ever gets done.
You know, like, and you have to go back and redo. And then a lot of people just leave that stuff in there, and that's fix it.
Yeah, you know? I like to have mine as clean as I can possibly get it. So I'm sort of a perfectionist.
Well, we are
so
too.
Go back and
you're
get
never
it perfect. Gonna,
you're never going to get them all. You're never going to get them all, but you can get most of them.
Yes, yeah, no matter how many times, and even people who've read it, and they'll tell me, hey, I caught this. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
You know, I've read books from Simon and Schuster that I found typos.
I know.
You know, it's
unbelievable.
It happens.
How many times have I read this and I missed this?
Yeah.
How did I miss this? I've read this a billion times.
When you start writing, though, you start seeing things that you never saw before. So it's writing is such a great, it's a great vocation. Just don't give up your day job.
Don't give up your day job.
That's it.
Maybe one day. Maybe one day.
Do you write every day, or are you, you know, disciplined, or do you, how do you organize your time to find time to write?
I write on my days off for sure. I can easily get 3 or 4 hours in on my days off. Days I go in, I will usually get up early. I like to give myself like an hour and a half in the morning before I go in. I like to get some writing done every day. There might be maybe, you know, at least 6 days out of the week I will get some writing in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like to, you know, once I'm in write mode, I like to get some stuff done every day, because otherwise I get a little antsy if I can't get something on the page. If I'm not in write mode, then because right now I'm in editing mode, so I'm editing my next book.
Ah.
And I'll try. I may not get to it every day, but I will get chunks of it done. It just kind of depends on where I am in my schedule.
Yeah.
Do you
go ahead, Bob?
Write just one project at a time, or are you working on? You have ideas for this one you're working on, but you're already starting to formulate and write.
Yeah, I can. Right now, I'm editing number 7, but I've already started book 8. Mm-hmm. Book 8 is actually draft is written. So while I'm editing book 7, I'm going to let book 8 sit. I kind of like to let it sit and stay away from it for a few weeks. So when I go back and reread, it's sort of fresh in my head. It's sort of like reading it like a reader.
Mm-hmm.
If I get the editing phase done, then I'm going to go back and reread number 8, because that'll start off a whole new, I'm going to start off a whole new storyline there. So that's, I can work on a couple of things. I won't necessarily write 2 things at the same time, but I can edit one and write another.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I found that editing my own stuff, I will go back and as I'm writing, I will fix things, but I don't try to edit my own stuff, because I miss, if I made a mistake the first time, I'm damn sure going to miss it the second time. So,
well, as I write, I like to sort of, once I finish, and come back to it the next day, I might reread like the previous page or page and a half. Mm-hmm, so I can kind of get back into the flow of the story. I won't necessarily edit so much. I might edit a few things if I, see things I would rather say differently, maybe, but nothing's major, because, I want to get the flow of the story back in my head. I want to get the story on the page. And then when I reread is when I'll sort of make different changes, but I won't reread until it kind of sits for a few weeks. And I kind of put it away, forget about it, because then I kind of want to forget the story if I can, as much as I can, so that when I come back, I'm rereading it fresh, and the dialogue is fresh, and I don't remember necessarily what I've written, and then I know I need to fix this or I need to change that, but I won't necessarily edit when I'm writing my first draft.
Do you like writing dialogue?
I love writing dialogue. It's my favorite thing to write.
And I've noticed that you didn't do it first person. You did all third person.
It's all third person. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of first person. I don't know. It feels weird to me. I'm more of a third person person. I like other people's point of view, and I like sort of getting other perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of first person.
We actually read a book not too long ago that was written in both first and third person. I don't remember the name of that book.
Wow.
In fact, Bobby and I both made comments about how it was a little rough to get back and you bounce back and forth. But if you can do it, it's great writing, because you're getting everybody's point of view.
Well, and I think didn't we read something recently that was 3 different first persons?
Yes, yes.
I was like, oh my gosh.
Yes. Yeah, every
would be different too.
Well, yeah, it was, because then you have to assimilate each character,
right?
And that makes the dialogue a little tougher to do, because how does this one react to this and this react to this and wow, it's just like holy crap! How do I keep this straight? But
if you like the challenge,
there's people that do it, and we're living proof that we've read it, so we know it can be done.
Yeah.
In fact, I think we've read just about one of everything now.
Yeah,
at least one of everything.
You can do it well.
Do you ever get writer's block? That is the name of the show, so I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah. rarely. I'm pretty, once I sit down to write, I find even if I'm not sure where I'm going to start or what I want to say, if I just start writing anything, whatever pops in my head, I'll just start writing it down. And within 3 or 4 sentences, it kicks in. The flow kicks in, and I'll pick it up, and I'm going off. It's not often that I sit and I stare at a page and have 0.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something I have dealt with. Mm-hmm. I've been pretty lucky. Usually once I have a story in my head, it's not going anywhere until I get it on the page. Mm-hmm. So I don't typically deal with that.
I usually have find a problem if I'm doing an action scene, especially if it's an action scene, and I'll lose my way for instant, just briefly, because I call it writer's pause, because it's just like all of a sudden it goes, wait a minute, I lost everything here. Where is it? And then you have to reread and reread, and you go, where was I going with this? Because I'm a pantser. I mean, I know where the story starts. I know where it ends, and kind of everything in the middle is seat of the pants. So, I let the characters guide where the book goes.
Yes, I like to do that, too. I will have an outline, though. I'll have a general outline, just so I know beginning, middle, end, and in parts and general parts in between,
right.
And that's sort of my guide.
Right.
But I kind of let the middle parts write themselves as I'm in the midst of putting it on the paper.
Right. My one rule to my characters is you can say anything in the book you want to say as long as you get to the ending that I want.
Exactly. So just get me where we need to go.
If you get there, cool. I'm good.
That's fine. That's good. Do whatever you need to do. Just get me where we need to go.
And then,
I have been in situations where I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to get to where I need to go.
I know,
And I'm like, where am I going to go with this? And I find if the story is here. I'm going to let it dictate itself, and I will sit down and I will write it. And ultimately, it shows up. It's the craziest thing. Now I know how I'm going to get there.
I think sometimes that's when your mind really stretches, and you go places that. I wouldn't even think about that before, but, that might work.
I find if I try and sit, if I'm not writing and I'm just trying to sit and think, okay, what am I going to do? I can't get it to, it won't show and it won't, I don't know, I get stuck. But if I sit and I write it and I just let my characters show me where I'm going, they will show me where I'm going. So sometimes it's just easier to sit down and start and just see where it leads.
Yep. Yep, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't even know where I'm going with this. Help me out, Bobby. I just had brain flatulence.
It's an interviewer's block.
Well, I'm actually so enamored of your writing abilities and your book that it's
well, thank you.
I can't tell you that enough because it's really good. And I really hope that you don't quit writing.
Oh, I'm not. I will not be quitting writing. Continue to do my job. That's great too. But I will always write because it's just so much fun, and I get such a kick out of it. It's where sort of the passion flows. It's where the creative juices pop out, and I just love to write my characters and the dialogue and who am I gonna, what am I gonna do next, and where are they gonna go now? And that's just fun. I mean, I can't not do it. I'll be honest, I
found the challenge, and I love dialogue as well, but I found the challenge with dialogue is to make it as realistic as you possibly can, to the way people actually speak.
That can be challenging.
It can be challenging, but it's fun once you get the rhythm of the dialogue down.
Yeah, once you get the rhythm down, I just kind of dictate what I hear in my head, because I can hear them speaking in my head. I just dictate, basically.
Do you speak your dialogue out loud?
No, I do not. It might be a little bit weird.
No, it's not. You know what? Most of the writers that we talk to do that.
They speak it out loud.
I do it. Once I write it, I say it out loud to see if it works. And if it doesn't work, that's when you have to go and change it.
Well, and I think we had an author, and I'm thinking it could have been Tosca again, who actually acts... Do you remember, Jim? She actually asks or acts out.
Yes, she acts out the acts
and
out the scenes.
Writes them and then writes them down.
Yeah, she acts out the scenes and then writes them down. Yeah.
Yeah, and she was a fascinating writer.
She is
wonderful writer.
She's actually
and
back
I
on
thought,
the show.
Wow, that's now there's a you know, that's something new we really hadn't heard.
No, I had never heard that before, and it actually sounded like a really good idea. But I'll tell you what, the more you write and the better you get, and then the crowning glory is the one day when you look at your sales figures and you've sold thousands of books.
Yes, that's exciting stuff right there.
I'll tell you what, yep. It makes you want to jump up and tell everybody.
Oh my gosh, yes, that's exciting stuff.
It is, yep. It truly, truly is. So, I've got one out now that I just finished that I'm hoping is gonna top my Big Wood Jonah Blue, but we'll see.
That's exciting. That's great. That's great.
We'll see. Well, yeah, we're gonna kind of cut you off here, and we've got some announcements we have to make. So, if you wouldn't mind, would you give our audience the address and the email address where they can reach you, and your website if you have one, Facebook, and you know the drill.
All that social
stuff.
Yeah,
I know the drill.
All the social media stuff.
Yeah, I have a website, jtbishopauthor.com, so you can learn all about my books there.
Okay.
The good news is, if you go to that website, you can join my email list. You can get that first book, Redline the Shift, for free. So there's a great way to get started on the series. Now, if you don't want to do that, you can always go to Amazon and JT Bishop, do a little search. You can get Redline the Shift for only 99 cents. So either way, it's a great way to pick up the series if you want to give it a shot and try it out. I'm also on Facebook, JT Bishop Author. I'm on Twitter, same thing. You can always shoot me an email at jt@jtbishopauthor.com. But
okay.
Yeah, definitely check it out and see what you think.
Oh, we will. And you know what? Thank you so much for taking the time out to spend your evening with us. And it was really delightful having you.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun. I've been enjoying talking to you guys.
Well, it's been a hoot having you. And you know, I think Bobby's over there. She's kind of like shivering probably.
Oh,
shivering.
No, we're comfortable here.
Yeah.
We're okay here. I think it's that whole Midwest section that's freezing.
Yeah. We're okay here in Texas, too. God, it's that whole Midwest place.
My sister, who's a librarian, just texted me. It's -3. They live outside Chicago snowing. Yeah, they've been in like the -40 wind chill. Like they've been really hit bad. And snowing. -3 and snowing. How does that happen?
Oh, yeah. It's usually ice crystals by then.
Awful.
I had a friend of mine sent me an email today, and he goes, well, if you know anybody in Chicago that owes you money, go knock on their door because they're probably home.
Good point.
Yep. Well, JT, thanks for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh,
it's JT Bishop. The name of her first book is The Shift. It's the Red Line Trilogy. And if you want to start with the book, get The Shift, because, man, it'll just dump you right in the middle of the story, and it is phenomenal. So, JT Bishop, again, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you guys, too.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
So anyway, what a great writer. A lot of fun.
I'm going to have to get that off her website. I almost did that last night.
Oh, did you? Well, you know, I told Ronan who it was, and he looked her up, and he got the first book, The Shift, today.
He
picked it up. So anyway, I have a couple announcements. Of course, I already told you this. February 26th, which is a Tuesday, we have another special writer's block. Our guest that night will be Tom Lang, who is the lead detective on the O.J. Simpson murder case. And he's written a book, yeah. And he's written a couple books, and we're going to discuss those. And this will be a special writer's block, so there won't be any process or anything going on. It's just questions about his books. And Tom's a really good guy. He lives over by me, so we just actually met him the other night and asked him to come on the show, and boom, he's here. So... lucky us.
Very cool.
Next week, we have Michael Brady coming back with us. You remember him? He's the spy.
Oh, Michael Brady
he's
is back next
spy
week?
Spy guy.
Ooh.
Your book will be to you Saturday.
Oh, that's right. You were sending it. Yes,
I did send it. Okay. Bob got his today. You'll get yours on Saturday. And actually, JT, if you're still listening, your mug will be there Saturday as well. So anyway, the name of his new book, he's only written two. This is the second one. It's called Into the Shadows, The Assassination Corps. So, yeah, the first one was so good. I mean, so we're looking forward to it. This guy was a real spy, so.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he knows his stuff. And, incidentally, I wanted to tell you that the last special we had, the girls that came in, they've picked up some real interesting offers and stuff from people that have listened to the show. So getting on this show does help.
Cool. That's exciting.
Yeah, it is for them, too. And in fact, they have an art show going tomorrow, which they'll be giving away signed copies of their printed magazine. And we're going, or selling, actually. I think they're going to give us one. But Jerry and I are going to go over and take a look and see what's going on. We're looking forward to next week. And, of course, we're looking forward. And we have Junie Fisher coming up in April.
Well, we do great.
On a Tuesday night, yeah.
Fabulous.
She says she'll be in studio.
Oh, she'll be in the studio?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the date?
Now, if you want me to set it up on a Tuesday, right before the Cowboy Festival, if you're coming out, I can do that.
We will be out that week.
Okay. Then I'll just go ahead and set it up for that Tuesday so you can be in the studio.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I can do that because I am awesome and gym-like.
Her book is getting tremendous, wonderful acclaim reviews. I'm eager to read it. Yeah.
Good. I have awesome. Jefferson's Chance is out now. E-book comes out tomorrow. The hardback came out last Monday. I've got 20 copies hitting my door on Sunday. As I said during the show, that you know you oftentimes go through and find stupid things. I found two stupid things on the same page. Oh. So I will do a pen and ink change. I've already fixed it, but I will do a pen and ink change. And it's a question of a couple strokes. I'll send you one, and you'll have it probably within the next week.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm almost going to guarantee you're going to love this book.
Awesome.
It's like I told Ronan, the last quarter of this book is like intense. Insanely intense. So you'll like it. You'll like it. Lots of blood, guts, Bobby Jean, stuff that you really like.
Well, the cover graphic, is that the cover graphic?
Yes.
Leg and
yes.
Very, I mean, that's a riveting, compelling.
Well, that tells the story of the book, actually.
Yeah.
You know, a fake leg and Texas Ranger badge. What does that tell you?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Well, for Bobby Jean Bell and myself, Jim Christina, and for Bob Brill, who just didn't seem quite to be able to get into the studio tonight, we'll be back next week with, of course, we'll have Mr. Michael Brady in Into the Shadows, the Assassination Corps. And until then, next Tuesday, we, of course, are out of here.